So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you for another week, another review, another documentary. What's happening, Wei?
Not much, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's great. I was trying to think of something to say, and I just went blank. Are you excited about today's review?
I am. I'm actually just doing some reading up on Gaia right now. That's why I didn't really give you a very good answer.
Oh, I see. So you're doing research as we speak.
Yeah. I wasn't paying full attention to what you're talking about right now.
Have you watched a lot of Japanese women's wrestling in your time?
No, I've watched the odd match here and there, but certainly not as much as I have, you know, Japanese men's wrestling.
Yeah, it's something I've definitely followed, casually. But never really have dived into any great degree. But something that whenever I have watched stuff, I generally have enjoyed what I've seen and would like to see some bigger events and stuff like that, because I've always I've read some stuff on the history of women's wrestling in Japan and some of the boom periods they had in the 80s and 90s, where the women's wrestling was on par with the men.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always kind of stood out to me because it was so drastically different from women's wrestling in North America, where the emphasis isn't really on, appearances. It's on technique and the quality of matches and work rate. And, the level from what I've seen is just so high out there that it's better than a lot of the men's.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly in the 80s, I mean, one of the big things was that when it was, the women's wrestling was pretty much a mainstream thing. It was you had you did have attractive women, but you also tried to market them outside of just wrestling. It would be they wrestle, but they also do sing, and their albums would be out there and stuff. And they would be big pop stars almost, you know what I mean? Would be marketing them like a Justin Bieber or whatever in Japan, and then you can go watch Justin Bieber wrestle this Saturday night.
Yeah, that's something. I don't think that's even just wrestling. It's it seems it's a lot of things like sports stars with at least in Hong Kong, which is what I'm familiar with. If you're a star in Hong Kong, let's say you're an actor in a soap opera or something. You also sing, you're also a singer. That's just part of it, part of the whole package, you know? You gotta know how to sing, if you can't just be an actor. You gotta be able to, go on tour and do concerts and make CDs. And I guess that's just how they make money, you know? Cause I guess the acting itself wouldn't be enough so they would have to go out there and, be able to sing as well. I just always find that so interesting because in North America, I mean, these skills are pretty exclusive. You know, you got actors who are strictly into acting. I mean, I know Keanu Reeves is in a band, but I don't think he takes, I mean, I don't know how many people take Dog Star seriously, you know, like they, but like in Asia, it seems like it's just one whole thing, one whole package. You know, you got to be able to act, but then you also have to be able to sing and do all this other stuff too, and dance.
Your brother's like a big producer over there. Has he ever delved into checking out any professional wrestling whenever you chat with him? Has he ever I know he's in Shanghai, not so much like Tokyo or some hotbed.
No, I got two brothers. One of my brothers is like a pop music producer in Hong Kong. So he's in Hong Kong, the other's in Shanghai, and I don't think there's not much professional wrestling at all, but they always go to, they often go to Tokyo, but no, I don't think they check it out ever. I really don't think it's like that mainstream right now.
No, not right now. No, definitely not. I was just, curious. I've never asked you about that.
Yeah.
Well, Gaia Girls, this documentary came out in, 2000. It's filmed, 1999, covering the Gaia promotion, which ran for about, 10 years, closing up in 2005. And it was really a promotion that was really spearheaded by, Chigusa Nageo, who was a major, major star, throughout the 80s. She was part of the Crush Gals, tandem, which was just a huge, huge act at the time, much like me and Wei were talking about, where they really extended outside of professional wrestling. And she was kind of, the figurehead here of Gaia. And, this documentary was interesting, Wei, because it was also, produced by two people that were just regular, like, documentarians and not so much wrestling fans or kind of coming into it with any kind of basis, behind it.
Yeah, that's right. I did some reading up on these documentarians, and they've done documentaries on, you know, there's one that they did called the Shinjuku Boys, where they're women that are basically living lives as men in Shinjuku, like just basically topics that aren't exclusive to wrestling or even sports at all, just, you know, life stories.
Yeah, it's Kim Longanoto and Jano Williams, who are the directors and writers of this documentary. And it pretty much is just completely centered around the Gaia Dojo. And I thought it was cool just to watch the opening, where they have an opening to one of the monthly Gaia shows that they would run typically at Corican Hall. And it's got this elaborate set, like a plane landing. And then it just yells, you know,
Oh man, how about this track?
Oh, we are liberty. We are violent. We are freak out. We are Gaia. This was exciting.
Yeah, that got me stoked. I mean, you're all these things. You're liberty, you're violent, and freak out. I didn't even know that was a thing.
We are freak out. Great opening. How could you not be excited about a show when that's your start to it? This blew away the WWE opening with the dun, dun, dun. And just pictures. I want Vince McMahon to yell, "We are freak out," yeah, in like his crazy Vince voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would get me very excited. So the starts off basically with introducing Chigusa Nageo, and it's really, the whole documentary revolves around an aspiring student, Seiko Takeuchi, who is a student within the dojo, and we kind of are following her path throughout the training at the dojo under Nageo, to eventually make her debut, and all of the hardships of this dojo. And Takeuchi, for those that are not familiar, she's, you know, this was probably like her biggest platform ever, was being the subject of this documentary, because, you know, she did wrestle after this, but never becoming any kind of star within Gaia or Japan for that matter, and kind of just fizzled away and was not really, one of the big stars in Gaia, despite this entire documentary based around her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some of the other characters, I would say that are featured prominently is a veteran by the name of, Satomura Maiko.
Yes.
And she's sort of, you know, a second to Nageo as a trainer, and, you know, basically gives a lot of guidance and, discipline to our trainee who we're following throughout the course of this, movie.
And she would be one that would, I mean, win the world title in Gaia, and also would beat Nagao in her retirement match, which was on that final Gaia show in April of 2005. Maybe Satomura should have been the one they built this whole documentary around.
Yeah, but the story wouldn't have been as interesting.
No. But, what were your thoughts here of just, of Takeuchi in general here? Because this documentary to me, Wei, it was kind of like, I was really engaged in the first half, and then when I think it was like her final test with Nagao, and it's like she gets beaten down for, well, both literally and then figuratively afterwards, where it's like, you gave up, you submitted. And I was like, oh, we're doing this thing. You know what I mean? Like that to me was, that was a big drawback to me of this documentary, where it was like the first half, this was great. It's a great story. And it's like, I don't think the real versus scripted, I don't think anyone watching this would have cared if you had just been open about it. But that to me was a real negative on this.
Well, I don't think like what you just mentioned was exclusive to the second half. It really was, you know, throughout the entire thing, where they kind of dance between what's real and what's not. It was very much like the way they kind of treated what's an example? Like Gut Check on TNA, where they have guys come out and they're all like wrestling, and there are people actually judging their performances, but they won't just come out and say, you know, you sold this well, you know, you should have, you know, not hit as hard, or in this spot or something. Like, they won't come out and say that. They'll say it in very general terms. Like, you worked very hard. You impressed the crowd. You impressed us, but you need to work a little harder. Like, something like that. And that was sort of the tone throughout this entire film, where, they showed, really, this movie was just basically showing how brutal this boot camp is for Japanese women's wrestling, especially just following this this trainee Takeuchi and seeing her go through basically by the time that she started this, they started filming this film, she had already been training for like a year or so. Mm-hmm. And so it takes us up to her first test. And the testing basically is to see whether or not she's ready for her debut to make the main roster. And the test basically consists of a series of matches in a gauntlet style between, Takeuchi and I believe what, five different people?
It went through, I think it was four. I have them all listed down here.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And building up to, her match with Nagao.
So one by one, you know, without a break, they have this person wrestle, and all throughout, she's just getting beat up and beat down. At one point she starts bleeding, and at the end we just see Nagao as well as the president of Gaia just basically berate this person, this girl, little girl, for not wrestling hard enough, not showing enough fire. And the first time she takes this test, she basically fails. And man, like, what immediately stands out about this movie is just how tough of a person Nagao is to her students. I mean, like, you think, I don't know, this kind of harkens back to, for me, like, a lot of those Maury Povich shows where they bring, like, naughty kids to, like, children's boot camps and they make them cry. Except, like, this wasn't, like, that campy. This was just like a lot more psychological. So, you know, so she fails her first test, and like Nagao's just like, you've disappointed me. Call your mom and dad. Tell them that,
call your mommy and daddy.
Call your mommy and daddy. Tell them you're going home. It's over. It's over. You're going to get injured too easily. Like basically, and meanwhile, like this girl, this like cute little girl, Takeuchi, who you wouldn't really suspect to become any type of pro wrestler or even any type of athlete at all, she's just like bawling. Like, you just feel so bad for her. And it all kind of like felt like she was going to do all this just sort of as a test. Like, I'm going to beat you down mentally, but at the end I'm just going to be like, oh, it's okay, I was just testing you. But no, like, she failed. And like, she just kind of, she leaves dejected, but we later learn that she gets a second try, and in her second try, she manages to pass. But anyway, the whole movie is basically just to show how difficult of a process it is to do this fake fighting stuff. And, yeah, it was just incredibly, I guess motivating. You know, like, it kind of speaks to the spirit of people, of these trainers, or of this, trainee to, you know, not give up despite everything. And to contrast her, route to her debut, you get to see a number of other people try and just basically practically give up. Like, we are introduced to this girl named, Wakabayashi, who is actually getting her second chance. This is her second time going through the whole process, getting to live in the house, training, doing all their squats, doing all their intense workouts. And she eventually just, like, you see her mopping the floor one day, and then on the lower crawl, it just says, Wakabayashi ran away that night.
Which was the second time they explained that she ran away, because she came back and she's introduced to us that she had been a former student who had left and now was coming back seeking redemption and was ashamed that she had left the first time and then leaves the second time.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a very real documentary in that sense. And like, to show, when they show that, man, this training is just like absolutely intense, absolutely. People alive seem to be able to do it. Yet at the same time, like you said, they do kind of try to maintain kayfabe here in not explicitly saying that all this stuff is scripted, but you know, they kind of dance around it. And I agree with you. I think that's that kind of especially, you know, when this film was made, 2000. You know, this is after Beyond the Mat, after Wrestling with Shadows. And after the Attitude Era, really, when it's really become public knowledge that all this stuff is scripted, yet I found it kind of a detrimental that they didn't want to publicly state that this stuff was fake. In fact, like, they went as far as to show what's her name, Saka, the veteran, what's her name, John?
Satomura.
She has a match. They showed her having a match. She loses. And then they show a post-fight interview of her crying about not training hard enough and never being able to make it to the top, as if like her loss, like as if this is like her reaction to losing that match. So I found that kind of,
it's like a post-fight scrum.
Yeah. Yeah. But like in character, essentially.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the Japanese wrestling culture is still significantly different from like the North American base. And I've always noted this in like certain interviews. You know, for instance, a couple of years ago, like we had Dr. Death Steve Williams on, and it's like the guy is just completely open about everything he's done in his career. But when it comes to his run in All Japan, it's like he was not comfortable talking about those matches being worked. And it was just this kind of, I think there's loyalty almost to like Giant Baba, that like the people that came before them, it would be like disrespecting them to be so open about it. And the same with Dynamite Kid. I mean, his book is raved about, that Pure Dynamite book. But in that book, if there's a negative, it's that he always portrays his Japanese matches as being real. And it's something that I think it's just kind of embedded in the culture of both, you know, the Japanese performers and the foreigners that went over there, because of the way I think it's been, you know, presented much closer to sport than it was. I mean, like you watch you know, even these matches here, way in the setup. I mean, this is much closer to almost like an MMA gym, so to speak, rather than, you know, a pro wrestling gym. Here in Canada or the U.S.
I would say, like, in some ways it looked even more intense than some of the,
I would say so. I mean, Takeuchi took maybe the nastiest drop kick I've ever seen in my life in this opening here, when she's working with Satomura and just training in the ring, and
Satomura is just yelling at her, how, like, who taught you, like, you're doing all your drop kicks wrong, this is how you do it. Irish whips her and just like full force kicks her with both legs in the face.
Like, it looked like her jaw snapped upon impact here. And the blood is just gushing out of her mouth as, Nagao, who is to me the star of this documentary. I mean, yeah. talk about a complex individual. This woman was it. I mean, just constantly calling, you know, she refers to all her students as her own children, saying that I never had children. So these are my children. But I treat them like my father treated me. And she constantly calls them idiots and would slap them. At one point makes a fist and just starts knocking on one of their heads. I mean, just, this total hard ass. And as I was really glad they sat down and interviewed her, because that to me were some of the most interesting parts of this documentary, where she's talking about her relationship with her father and her teaching methods, in that it would be very easy for me to be polite and kind to these people, and in the short term that would be great for them, but long term, me constantly cutting them down are going to make them hard people, which will be accepted when they finally make their debuts, and they're going to need this tough, tough foundation that I'm building for them, and they're going to have to forgo being happy.
Yeah.
Essentially. I mean, it was quite the psychological trip here, listening to the reasoning behind this and kind of just the mentality that is in a lot of these women, because there was such a incredibly high standard for the work at this time that, you know, both in male or female dojos, they would prepare these people so that when they debuted, they were ready to go. And yeah, that was something that was, you know, really, I mean, it was really tough to even get into some of these dojos because the standard was so high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something you even still see today when people say, oh, like, you know, Ric Flair, before he passed, like they wanted to send him to Japan simply because, I guess, I mean, they know how great the training is, or how difficult the training is, and how disciplined the training is in Japan. I think that's a rep that still stands up today. But, you know, as far as the idea that, you know, pro wrestling training, especially with these documentaries, like, I find a lot of them is just to, like Tough Enough was, like, I forget some of the others, but, like, especially Tough Enough, where I really felt like the mandate was to show that wrestling, even though it's fake, this training is about some of the hardest training you could do for any type of physical activity. And I always get the sense that pro wrestling trainers or pro wrestling people have something to prove, that, you know, their sport, even though you think it's fake, it's probably harder than a lot of the real things you could do.
And I think that certainly comes to, even with kind of the preservation of kayfabe in this, I don't think anyone watches this not thinking that, you know, this training is incredibly intense, and it's not a far cry from what does go on in some of these. Like, certainly I feel it was heightened in certain instances here. And that was, like, the only part here, is that when you hear Nagao just rip apart somebody here, does the camera go off and she just, like, laughs with them after this? I mean,
no.
These are the, hey, I mean, you're watching all this where it's like they're putting on a show here for the camera. Like, this whole thing about, you know, you submitted. I mean, that to me was a really, bit of a distraction for me, was if these people are playing characters essentially here. At least Nagao was here for the camera.
Well, that's what I was kind of confused by, because, like, oh yeah, a lot of the, Nagao's berating of Takeuchi was, you know, you got tired so you gave up. How are you going to do that in a real fight? But I mean, I don't know. Like, part of me was like wondering, is she talking in character about this person submitting, or is she talking about this wrestler mentally giving up and not, like, putting in 100% when she got tired? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I feel it could have easily been achieved where I think enough people watching this would understand what these training mechanisms are, and rather than go off of, you know, you lost a exhibition match here in the dojo, you could have had Nagao tear apart somebody for just their work inside of the ring, and I think that would have just translated a bit better, because I think that people at least have that base understanding, you know what I mean, of what makes a good wrestler and what doesn't, and you can break it down into timing, into conditioning, and that kind of thing.
But I guess, you know, again, like, I don't know if that's something you can blame the filmmakers for. I mean, it's definitely something that it seemed like the participants, like Nagao herself and, like, a lot of the other wrestlers wanted to protect and not expose to a camera.
We should also chat about one of the other recruits, Sato, who shows up at this dojo.
Oh, God. Like, once you see this girl, okay, first of all, that other girl, Wakabayashi, she leaves. So there's, I guess there's more room for another candidate here. And this girl, Sato, who's just like, man, couldn't have been more than like 90 pounds. Like,
and
she's
looked like she was 15.
She's like this ponytailed girl, probably saw some wrestling on TV, looked really interested, always wanted to be a wrestler, she says. And like, she just looks like, I mean, this was already after we've seen that first test that, Takeuchi took, and just seeing all these things that these girls have gone through. And then you see this, like, tiny little girl, cute little girl with ponytails walk through the doors, and you're like, he has no fucking idea, like, what she's in for. She sits down with her mom, and it's like, I guess it's like the first date. Like, it really reminded me of, like my first, like, I moved a few times, like, when I was younger. And, yeah, it reminded me of, like, going to a new school with my mom. And, you know, you would sit down with the principal, and they'd all be, like, really nice to you. And then all of a sudden, once your parents leave, that's when, like, the bitchiness comes out. And then they start treating you like shit.
And then did the principal make you cry and then accuse you of having bullshit tears? Because real tears mean you have no expression on your face, as Nageo explained.
Yeah, no, I had very real tears when I cried.
They weren't bullshit tears.
They weren't bullshit. But, no, but basically, yeah, so that's sort of the scene. And, you know, they're even very upfront about it, even with the mom there. They're like, I'm all smiles right now, but once you leave, I'm going to be really hard on your daughter. And so this girl, Sato, like, she starts with the training, and she quits too. It's just like, it's that difficult.
Yeah, it's so sad as her mother is like, her mother is not a wrestling fan. She's explaining she can't even watch it. But it's like she's dropping her off here at like some prison, and then you just see her drive off as we see Sato, who has clearly walked into a world she knows nothing about and no clue what she is in for. And it quickly becomes apparent just how in over her head she is. I mean, right down to, I mean, she...
Well, she didn't even have a match. It was simply all the working out. Like,
squatting. I mean, yeah. And granted, I mean, this was probably, they had told them to do like 500 squats, and the camera turns on at like 450, where Sato is just can't even bend her legs at this point. Like, this is just, it's painful to watch her here as she's doing these squats, I believe with Takeuchi. And you can see the one person who is in shape and Sato, who is just dying here doing these squats here. And it leads to Sato. I mean, there's one point where she just breaks down crying, watching the punishment that Nageo is putting Takeuchi through in the ring. And they're trying to explain to her that, you know, this is for Takeuchi's good. The promotion has high hopes for her when she debuts, and she needs to go through this kind of training in order to be successful when she debuts. And and this just turns Sato right off of this world.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she decides to leave. But I really love, that scene where they just show this girl Sato attempting to do squats with, Takeuchi, because like, you can see Takeuchi's like, you know, full squats. And then like this girl Sato just starts trying to do them. She's probably like, you know, already done like, I don't know, probably 100 by this point. But like, it gets to the point where they're counting, but like her squats weren't even really squats. They were just like, I'm not even really going to bend my legs. I'm just going to swing my arms up, and hopefully you don't count these. You'll count these as actual squats. Like, I love that they kind of let that scene just play full out, because like, I think a lot of us have, like, we've been there. You know what I mean? Like, if you've tried to do any type of, I don't know, CrossFit deal, or even, like, man, I don't know, if you're a hockey player or a basketball player and, like, you've had to do anything like that where you've had to kind of push yourself, it's, like, it's that kind of a humbling mental struggle that you feel when you're trying to keep up with somebody else. So, like I said, a very real documentary, despite kind of the illusions it tries to maintain.
It's kind of like when you and me do jiu-jitsu. You're kind of like Takeuchi, and am I like Sato to you?
I'm totally not there. No, you're not. You're
Way just bangs me on the head. Come on, idiot. Have you ever done squats? You ever tried them? I used to do them as part of my workout. I used to do like, I would push myself to do 100 of them and they were excruciating by the like final 20.
Jeez, wow. Yeah, that's a lot of squats. You know, I don't do them often. But
there was a story years ago that like Chris Benoit, obviously he would do squats like all the time and stuff. And he got somehow Sean Daivari to do them with him and they did 500. And Daivari, he got through them. He did them. And then the next day he woke up and his legs were like just completely fucked. Like yep. Couldn't even walk.
Yeah, I would do it. I'm sure. 500. Wow.
So build yourself up, folks, if you're getting into squats. I've always looked at squats. I'm like, man, there is like back problems waiting to be exposed with this particular exercise here. It's the way your back is arched and doing that volume.
Yeah, you're supposed to keep your back straight, like they said.
Well, it's just, even in proper form, it looks, you know, your back is not going to be completely straight doing these things.
I don't know. I'm not a...
Don't exercise, folks. It could be dangerous. That's what I'm trying to say. So after Takeuchi goes through her final test, it was matches with Kaito.
This is her second test.
Yeah, her second test.
She gets permission to get a second test.
Yes. Yoshi Uematsu and then Nageo, and it ends with Takeuchi just takes this nasty forearm, and Nageo is just slapping her after the match, asking if, does this frighten you? Are you frightened? Why did you give up? And she said, after all that, all that's happened is you're bleeding a bit. Who cares? And Takeuchi admits she was frightened. And Nageo here knocks on her head, slaps her, calls her rubbish and ashamed to be her teacher. But the president of Geo, Yuka Sugiyama and Nageo, they allow her to kick out. They're going to give her a promo, and she gets to convince them. This was right out of gut check, way, where she got to talk before they ruled their decision.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't even know if this was like really a promo though. It was like,
it was a girl whimpering.
Dude, it really looked like an adult talking to a 5-year-old. Like, they had rendered this girl, Takeuchi, into like the state of a frightened little baby. And they're like, she's crying, her face is all bloodied. Now they're like, now look at your peers and tell them how you feel. And what does she, like, even say? She's mentally beat down. She's crying. She has blood all over her face. And, like, just this visual of this woman, like, this human being in this state in front of all her peers like this. I thought it was, like, pretty, I don't know, pretty gripping, film right here.
Like, this was very, like, militaristic, you know, in its whole approach, where it's like the idea is you take these young men and women and you completely break them down and then you rebuild them in your vision. And you could really make this case in Japanese wrestling of the kind of people you get in these industries who, I mean, ignore injury, who work through ungodly amounts of pain, and you just look at the difference here in terms of their dojo system. I mean, this is it's very eye-opening. I mean, we can criticize maybe some of the kayfabe nature of this documentary, but the elements of what exists in these dojos is very much represented here.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's really exclusive to Japan. It's like, you know, we've seen that, like the power plant from WCW, like anytime we've seen footage from that or seen footage from Tough Enough, for instance, it's always really this type of mentality. And it really does explain that, like what wrestlers are thinking when they are struggling to finish a match despite, you know, tearing a quad or, you know, whatever else happening. Like, it seems like they are raised to be just, to fight through everything, to be tough, and to not pussy out no matter what, you know, even if your head's fallen off.
So she is eventually told that she has passed her test and she will debut on October the 23rd, 1999 at Corkune Hall. And She says that she wanted to, she had requested a blue ring outfit, and they present her this ugly lime green one instead and say, this is your ring wear.
You didn't even get to choose her color.
Doesn't even get her color.
No.
Not surprising, though, Wei. Not surprising. Based on what we had previously seen here, of course they were going to give her something even worse than what she wanted.
I didn't
think. Fuck you. You're not getting blue. You're getting lime fucking green.
It didn't look that bad, though.
It was fine. I mean, it's probably, you know, Kenta Kobashi, who maybe originally... You know, all the young boys got black at the beginning, if you remember. They all have to wear black tights. They get no gimmicks. And then maybe they said... Well, Kenta, what would you like to wear? You have graduated from the color black. And he's like, oh, I would love red and gold. It's like, yeah, you're wearing orange, motherfucker. Okay. And Kenta Kobashi, we bring up here, originally turned away by All Japan to come into their dojo, just to kind of emphasize kind of their standards of things. Kenta Kobashi was originally turned away.
Yeah. You know, seeing something like this, it's not hard to believe.
So she makes her debut, and it's pretty much just a kind of montage of her match where she has Satomura. Her parents show up in the audience, and they're constantly cutting over to them watching. And Takeuchi loses her first match.
You really feel like this is a big deal. I mean, we just spent the past hour and a half with this woman, just seeing everything she's gone through just for this like one moment to debut on the show. To have her first match, and like she's standing there in the corner as the announcer announces her voice, the streamers come in, and it actually was quite emotional just seeing like this big moment for her. It was like, I mean, like, so how often do we get to watch like, you know, people's debuts in the WWE? Quite often. And
this,
we don't think
this is right up there with Maven.
Are you joking? Are you being sarcastic?
I'm joking.
Okay, but I'm being serious here. Like, you know, how often do we see like a Fandango debut or something like that? And to us, it doesn't look like any type of big deal. But I mean, you got to think like watching something like this like reminds us that, man, even to get onto like I don't know superstars is a major accomplishment for a lot of people who, you know, probably trained like years to get to this point. And yeah, so watching Takeuchi debut here, You just kind of really feel for her because you've seen how hard she's worked to get there. And like, I love that they put the camera on the mom because like, you have to wonder that, you know, this mom probably hasn't seen her, you know, her daughter in like over a year and a, or however much. And she probably, you know, dropped her daughter off, you know, a little girl, but now she's seeing like her daughter in this ring in front of all these people in Korakuen Hall, delivering all these drop kicks and taking all these I don't know forearms and everything. So you get to see her kind of like cringe and get shocked to see her little girl turn into this.
So she loses the match, and then afterwards it's a post match interview. Interesting, in all of their terminology, it's always referred to as a fight. She lost her fight. She has her upcoming fight in the dojo. It's all fights. And she says she's frustrated that she was beaten. And she is asked who she admires the most. And she says her trainer, Chigusa Nageo, she admires the most.
Mm-hmm.
What a fitting end to this documentary.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to give people the sense that, you know, because they do kind of dance around kayfabe here, that this was in any way like a bad documentary. No, not at all. Like, quite the opposite. I mean, if you can get past the little few instances of that, then I think you'd really enjoy this. I mean, I do think some of the I do think that they could have perhaps set up like the idea of wrestling in Japan or even female wrestling in general a little better off the top. It felt like you just kind of... It felt like you kind of had to know what pro wrestling was, and like you kind of had to know what Japanese pro wrestling was, and kind of be familiar with what Japanese pro wrestling was before you even got there.
I think they almost took the opposite tact, wherein they kind of just constructed this their own kind of. Idea of what wrestling is in Japan and kind of presented this to an audience that probably has no clue and probably left this with the question of whether this was legitimate or not. And it seemed that that was the way they kind of portrayed this whole kind of environment in Japan to just kind of, you know, if you don't have a basis for it, we're going to create a basis, even if it isn't actually how things are there.
I suppose so. But I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like this was made for a North American audience, a Western audience in Britain. And obviously those people would know what wrestling was, but I don't know how many people would know what Japanese female pro wrestling would be. And so I guess I personally expected a bit more of a primer off the top just to show people, wow, like this is what this is. But yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I thought some of the strong points too was the fact that they didn't obviously you're talking here about it would have been very easy to introduce so many different students and different wrestlers in this, and they kept it to just a few key characters. And I think that was very good for people that maybe aren't familiar with all of these names, and you just kind of had kind of two real focal points in terms of characters in this documentary, and they didn't overdo it with too many people in this thing to keep track of for people unfamiliar with Gaia.
Totally, totally. Yep. You have your trainee, you have like the bitch trainer, who, like you said, really is kind of steals the show because she's just like, she's the most hard ass trainer that I think there's ever been, like more so than anybody you've seen documented in North American reality TV or pro wrestling reality TV, you know, like more so than that Surge guy or Sarge, what's his name?
Oh, Buddy Lee Parker.
Yeah. Whoever. Al Snow, Taz, Austin, like this guy, or this woman was just like, man, like she kind of, you could tell she kind of has some issues. Like she, at the end, she kind of talks about my dad, you know, would hit me, a lot. And, you know, so when I hit these girls, I do it to help them. Because when I hit them, it hurts me too. It hurts my hands, but it also hurts my heart. It's exactly what she said. And, yeah. And
explaining how her father thought she would never be anything. And she's just like casually joking, like saying, so that always drove me. So now my father's here and I'm just slightly ahead of him. So, I've succeeded.
Yeah.
And she just says this so nonchalantly, like not like she's really, feeling guilt or that this is a saddened part of her life. She's just explaining it in common, logical terms that, yeah. I've surpassed my father.
Well, obviously she feels like what her father did, despite, you know, I don't know how crazy it might sound. She probably thinks it worked for her to drive her to this point. And so she believes that these methods are, the right methods to use to teach her students. So yeah, very interesting.
So what would you give this this documentary for those curious about your rating?
It's definitely a different type of documentary than what we're used to in terms of pro wrestling documentaries here. I mean, very little talking heads, no narration at all, not even slates to show text to narrate and guide us throughout the movie. It's very much just clip, 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 and I really liked it. I thought it was really good because it shows a portion of the pro wrestling world that I don't think gets any type of coverage in Japanese women's pro wrestling. And I think some of the footage that they managed to capture and some of the moments they managed to capture are just like really, really gripping and really captivating. So I give this 8 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
I give this one a 6 out of 10. I definitely would encourage people to check it out because, as I said, it's not a part of wrestling you see covered too in-depth. I think there's a lot to take away from this, but I wouldn't put it in the top tier of wrestling documentaries for me. But we did post it. It's very easy to watch should you be interested in watching this. So it is easily accessible. We posted it in the feedback thread, and now we can go to your feedback for those of you that did check it out. And do you want to kick us off, Way?
Sure. We go to Ronaldo, who says, I appreciate the discipline deal and all that stuff, but man, those kicks to the head are just wrong. What's the point of having a staged fight if you just lay them shots in and hurt your opponent? I've been a wrestling fan since 1988 and have yet to understand the whole, in order to make it look like it hurts, It's got to hurt, you know? Mentality. Good documentary, though. Just a glimpse inside Japanese women's wrestling and how serious they are in trying to compete with their male counterparts. This is serious business for them. That I got.
All right, next up. Yeah, and we thought Hardcore Holly was being a bully. I had to watch that potato a few times. You know, though, the business is tough and you gotta want it. Was it over the top? I don't think so. That's part of breaking down and building you up. That lesson paid dividends, in my humble opinion. Very enjoyable and a good watch.
Tanis, this was also my first time watching the documentary and a real eye-opener on how, in Japan, they really take this as a sport. I get Nagao's mindset on being tough with her students because wrestling is a nasty beast that will devour you if not properly prepared. And she thinks of them as the children she never had, but verbally and physically abusing them so bad that will hate her and try to beat her up is a little out there for me. Just imagine if Kelly Kelly was training in a setting like this and didn't run the ropes right with Nagao watching her. Not a pretty sight. I enjoyed this documentary and was wondering if there was any way one could get this in DVD form.
I'm sure you can, but
yeah, I don't know who you would contact.
Yeah, BBC, I don't know. BBC. I mean, they were the ones that funded this. MP Shaw writes, I first saw this back in the very early 2000s on the BBC and spent the next few days telling everyone about it and asking if they watched it. They hadn't, and little had changed. I still tell people about it, and it's still rare I encounter anyone who has. So I got a little excited when I heard you guys say you were going to review it. Hopefully this will lead to more folks giving it a go. As documentaries go, it's excellent. As wrestling documentaries go, it's perhaps the best I've seen. It not only captures the cultural importance of wrestling in Japan in the late 90s and early 2000s, but shows the level of dedication and self-discipline needed to get into the business in Japan. Not that Western workers don't have it hard, but this is some next level shit. And I love how it completely undoes that stereotype about Japanese women being demure and restrained all the time. Sure, they are some of the time, but once they're in the ring, fuck. Which leads me to Takeuchi. If you don't come out of this loving and admiring her, I don't want to know you. A side note, this is available on DVD with a second doc, also by Kim Longinotto and Jana Williams, called Shinjuku Boys, about women who live as men and work in nightclubs catering to female guests. Yeah, pretty different to gay girls, but still worth a look.
There you go. Eddie and Owen Sound. Anytime you hear wrestlers talk about training in Japan, you always hear some horror stories about how tough it was, and you're never sure what to believe. But after watching this documentary, it really is an eye-opener about how hard the training is, what they put you through, and how seriously the Japanese take pro wrestling. This gave me a better appreciation of not just Japanese women's wrestling, but the Japanese product overall. It's definitely given me more stuff to look up on YouTube while I'm on my night shifts at work. Thanks for all the hard work, and love the podcast.
Go to Trent from Texas. I might be naive, but I think most of this was a big put on for the cameras. I just can't buy that they could really be this tough on women. I can't imagine anything like this existing in America where women would go through something like this. I know Japan is a very disciplined culture, but I doubt they really go this far with the women. Let me know if I'm wrong on this. The most interesting thing about this documentary to me was to see how open Japan was about the business at the time. This was a year before Tough Enough, and in America in 2000, the business wasn't completely exposed quite yet, and certain things were still kept guarded. I was very curious to know if you guys know just how strongly they protect the business in Japan, or when it was okay to expose the industry for what it is. I mean, it's nowhere near where it is here in North America. I mean, it's still, I mean, people know what pro wrestling is, obviously. But you know, me and Wei not living in Japan, I don't think can speak to, you know, the general thought process. Maybe that's a good question for Chris Charlton and WH Park.
Absolutely. So
send that to them of, the ins and outs. But even wrestlers today that have, you know, there's been a few that have written books and, you know, actually gotten grief for being open about the business and stuff. So it's just a different culture over there in terms of where the business is and preserving it. And, you know, it's not necessarily a country that's just reactive to what happens in the US. It's very different.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Brother Nate.
Yes.
Brother Pollock and Brother Ting. Props on your pick of a documentary that most of us have never seen or even knew existed. I've always been a big fan of women's wrestling dating back to promotions like GLOW or the LPWA, but once I was old enough to understand the importance of work rate, my attention was quickly drawn to the Luchadores of Mexico and the Joshi Pros of Japan. I first discovered the gay promotion through their brief association with WCW back in the mid-90s. I remember being amazed by the in-ring style of workers like Nagayo, Satomura, and Zero. These women just confirmed the opinion that I first had when I saw wrestlers like the Great Kabuki or his son, the Great Muda. Japanese wrestlers are some of the coolest people on earth. One of the main reasons I was drawn to Gaia back in the day was because of their roster. Akira Hokuto, Miyami Ozaki, Kaoru, the Reunited Crush Gals, and my personal favorite, Toshi Uematsu. Gaia had no shortage of talent under contract. Honestly, I always preferred the Arisen promotion to Gaia in the early 2000s, mainly because of Ayako Hamada, but I did keep up with Gaia via the internet until the day the promotion folded. All in all, I'm excited to watch the documentary and listen to your review of it. I know I haven't seen the film yet, but given my love for the subject matter, I'm giving it a preemptive 9 Braxton Witherspoon and the Smart Marks recording a diss track for Chris Maffei out of 10.
Yes. So there you go. I still have to, I have yet to, if Nate and, See No Evil are listening to this. I was gone in Winnipeg all week, so I have not contacted them yet to send their prize packs, but I don't want them to fret that we have forgotten because, they are our winners. So there you go. That easily could have been an email to them rather than broadcasting this, but this is the new email way. Just announcing stuff on a show.
We saved time.
So there you go. Thanks to all of you that that did check out this documentary. Always, you know, the ones that are kind of under the radar, it's always great when you can find them online and then post them for people to watch. And hopefully the two directors didn't have too much issue with that. Anyway, as we wrap things up, Wei, we go from Gaia Girls into whatever we're going to review next week. I do have a suggestion, but I know you've got a very, very busy, busy week, so I want to know kind of where the waiting temperature is. Where is your level of availability over the next week to watch something?
Oh, I'm fine, yeah. Yeah, so, well, what was your suggestion?
Okay, well, I've just emailed it to you, and I just want you to watch the first 10 seconds and make a yes or no judgment if you want to watch this.
All right, I just have the link, and now I'm about to watch the first 10 seconds. Give me 1 second here. Here it is.
It's actually.
Oh God. Sure.
Are you sure? You say that very. I have a backup if you don't want to do this.
No, this is fine.
I feel it's about time that we go back to my favorite era of wrestling.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Why not?
Okay, next week, it is June, everyone, and, you know, I feel over the last, you know, really, I feel the last year, WCW has been really underrepresented on Review Away, and they had 2 years that were absolute horrendous to sit through at the time, but now, for a show like this way, I think they really are a gold mine, and that is why next week we will review the 1999 Great American Bash, highlighted by the No Limit Soldiers kicking off the pay-per-view as they get out of a limo. This was when Kevin Nash was booking and coincidentally is in the main event of this show. And this was at a time when they were starting to try and get some young talent over. And this show was a key show to try and get that young talent over. Whether they would succeed or not, you can tune in next week and get our thoughts on it. And we can look back in hindsight at this show. But, Wei, your last chance to kick out here. I don't want to saddle you here with this a whole WCW pay-per-view if you're not down with it.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see some Master P and the No Limit Soldiers in pro wrestling.
I am. When I found this, I was like, oh, my goodness. And the whole thing is in its own file on YouTube, which is always a plus to me when you don't have to go searching for shows that are, let's be honest, are pretty much hidden at this point. So we can post it and everyone can take a look at the Great American Bash from 1999, a pay-per-view that I spent $29.95 on back in June of 99. So I feel I have the digital rights to, and I will take the blame of sharing it with the Review Away audience. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, next week, Great American Bash 1999. And then later on this week, we have all of our regular shows. The MMA Report will be up on Thursday featuring Wei, a former colleague of ours, Marc-Andre Drolet, who's going to be joining us, who, unbeknownst to us, on Saturday night, quite a big moment at UFC 161.
Yeah, he got into the octagon, well, with permission, of course, from Dana. And he proposed to his girlfriend, Right in there.
Who we met the night before. We were at a party and he came up. He's like, hey guys, this is my girlfriend. And we're just chatting and stuff. And then Sunday morning we get into the plane and we had just grabbed the newspaper covering the UFC event just by chance. And we open it and there's Marc-Andre on one knee in the octagon proposing. I was like, how did we miss this the last night?
Oh,
this was never brought up at the post-fight press conference or anything. I thought someone would have noticed this.
I mentioned it to you. I saw it on Facebook.
What, the night before?
Yeah.
Oh, I was a zombie on Saturday night, so it easily didn't, it just escaped me.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, he's going to be on the MMA report this week. Review and Impact, it's going to be myself and Nate this week because Wei has a very busy week and some much deserved time off. So that is coming up later on this week, and then all of our usual stuff coming up on the weekend, including a big guest on The Law Sunday night, which I will announce on Review and Impact because I don't like to announce things before they are completely set. So that is coming up. In the meantime, you can go to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe to us on iTunes, where we're getting a lot of compliments about the download speed. So I take a bow for your great work.
Oh, okay. I'm doing that right now.
And you can give Wei a follow at Wei0937 and at Law Radio, at I Am John Pollock, all that great stuff. And we'll be back later on this week chatting some wrestling and MMA. And as I just completely ramble on here, Wei, we need some music to go out here. What really sends this show off on a great high point?
Well, it definitely felt like throughout this documentary, they purchased the rights to one song. And that was
The song I used at the start. Oh.
Oh, okay.
What if I find a funky remix of it? Because I'm sure one of the...
No.
Oh.
Phone call.
Ask whoever's calling. Ask them for a song.
All right.
This could be really cool.
You know what? No, you just...
No? No interactive song to go out? Well, you know what? We're going to go out with the words that's on everyone's mind right now towards Wei. Here is Dragonette. Pick up the phone.
No, they're not here right now.
Oh.
All right, bye-bye. Hello?
Goodbye. There you go. This will sound great in post.
Nice. Great. Cool.
We're going out with Pick Up the Phone, if you didn't hear it.
Oh, nice. Yes. Nice.